everyone. Welcome to the Chicago Football Podcast. I am Kevin Fishbane, your host. We got a slam-packed show for you. It's going to be awesome. We got five interviews, one for five of the nine draft picks. This is part one of our Get to Know the Bears Rookies post-draft podcast special. Next week, you'll get part two with the remaining four picks. Today, we are covering Cody Whitehair, Nick Kwiatkowski, Deion Bush, DeAndre Hall, and Jordan Howard, talking to folks that know those guys best. Of course, my executive producer, Dan Mott, is here. Follow all of our Bears content on Twitter at Bears_insider. I'll give you a quick, maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds on what I thought of each pick after you hear the interviews. But overall, I think Bears fans got to be pleased and excited about the direction that Ryan Pace has his team going. The Matt Slauson intro role cuts were the big news, and you're taking leaders out of the locker room for sure. But up to this point, Ryan Pace, John Fox, Vic Fangio, I think, you know, Dave Magazoo, you know, that they've earned some trust about what they're doing. Of course, if the team goes 6-10, 7-9, then you got to take it from there. But for now, these are tough moves to make, but you want a GM with conviction. You want a GM who is confident in what he's doing and not making kind of wild head-scratching moves. And I think that's kind of how Ryan Pace has handled things. Let's get right to it. Our first guest, Cody Whitehair, was the second-round pick for the Bears. He is pretty much in line right now to potentially be the starting left guard from day one. And I talked to the Kansas State offensive line coach, Charlie Dickey. Coach, whenever we get a new player with the Bears, a draft pick, I'm always curious about first impressions. So when Cody Whitehair first got to Manhattan or even in the recruiting process, what did you see from him that maybe told you this guy could be special one day?
Well, I just his toughness, his athleticism. He was a really, really athletic guy. And he just moved really naturally. And he just played with you know, we had him in our camps, and you know, when he was younger, and he just, you know, he would just compete. He really competed really hard.
And then throughout his career, I mean, you had enough confidence in him to have him start as a freshman. You're able to move him around, guard and tackle throughout those 4 years. What was the progression, the development that you saw from him from freshman to senior year? How did he grow as a player?
Well, he grew, you know, really, really well. I mean, you know, we started him off at guard, and I always felt like guard was his most natural position. He started at left guard as a redshirt freshman, and you know, that was the year we won the Big 12, and he played against some good players and did a great job, and it was just a natural progression for him. You know, obviously I would have liked to have kept him at the guard spot, but he became my best offensive lineman, and I needed them to move out to that left tackle spot.
Was there a point early on, later on, that you thought to yourself, wow, this guy is definitely going to be able to make it in the NFL?
Yeah, I thought really early. I thought as a freshman, I you could see signs, you know, that he had a chance, you know, and then he just kept getting better and better. So, yeah, you could definitely see it.
And then with the Kansas State offense and kind of the blocking scheme you guys there, what part of that, if it's different, I know sometimes there's that transition from college to pro, what part of that might be, you know, may help Cody in his transition, some of the things you guys did there in Kansas State?
Well, you know, we did a lot of the same running schemes. I mean, we do a multiple of running schemes and pass protections. So I don't think it would be too difficult for him. I mean, we do all the inside outside zones. We pull our linemen, you know, we run power schemes. We run, you know, counter schemes. We do a lot of it. We have all the different types of protections. I mean, obviously the terminology is going to be different. What his offensive line coach asks him to do might be different in some ways, but you know, one thing that Cody does is he picks things up really, really easy. He's really smart.
Mm-hmm. Now, the coaching staff here is really focusing on athleticism with their offensive linemen. And I know Cody scored well with his agility at the combine, and he showed his versatility at Kansas State. But his athleticism, being able to move a little bit, whether it's in the screen game or, you know, some of the run plays where you have to get him kind of outside of the box a little bit, what about his athleticism has stood out to you?
Well, he's really good in space. He plays with great body control. So, you know, he runs really well, and I think that's a key, you know. So, you know, when you get those big guys out in space, you know, you still have to be able to break down and be able to block somebody, and he's able to do that.
You mentioned Cody was at tackle for you, and I know Pro Football Focus graded him as one of the best, if not the best, in terms of keeping your quarterback clean there in Kansas State. Was there a game this year that really stood out in terms of going against a very good pass rusher that he really stepped up his game and really wowed people?
Well, I thought he did a good job against Sean Oakman, you know, the guy from Baylor.
Right.
And, you know, I thought he held his own against Emmanuel Ogba, you know, from Okie State. You know, I thought he played pretty consistent the whole year. But those were two guys that I thought he played well against.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Charlie Dickey, offensive line coach for Kansas State, obviously coach Cody Whitehair. The last four seasons, Whitehair, the Bears' second-round pick, really in line to potentially start here for the Bears at left guard. Coach, do you have any good Cody Whitehair stories that we can't read about in the stats or in the combine drills?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, off the top of my head, I don't know if I can think of it, the whole bunch, but I just know that he was just he's a real competitive guy. I know I always remember, you know, when he, you know, his redshirt freshman year that in 2012, you know, he didn't play particularly well against TCU. And he went against a good football player, and I thought, you know, that was in the back of his mind that whole season. And, you know, the following year, he really played well against that kid and did a good job. And we ended up winning. And so, I mean, I just remember him just having a chip on his shoulder, wanting to play well that game.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll wrap up with this. You know, for you, and you've been at Kansas State for a little while, so you kind of know how this stuff works. But what's kind of the pride you have when you see someone like Cody coming through your program, continue to develop and improve, and get all the way to the point where you can be a second-round NFL draft pick? What's that pride that you're able to feel for someone like Cody?
Well, you're just excited for the young man. You just see him. I'm excited for Cody. I think he's going to be a great pro, and he's just a as good a football player he is, he's just a better person. He's a humble kid, and he's gonna do great. I'm really excited for him.
Well, we're looking forward to getting to see him on the field and meeting him off it as well. Offensive line coach for Kansas State, Charlie Dickey, talking about Cody Whitehair. Charlie, again, thank you for the time.
You're welcome. God bless.
And thanks to Coach Dickey for that interview, who's actually driving in California at the time, doing a recruiting trip, took some time to chat with us. And, you know, I think some folks were kind of confused by the Whitehair pick. But then when you look at it in a vacuum, and I'm talking about vacuum outside of the Bears and outside of what Chicago's doing, you see that he was rated by some people to be the best guard in the draft. Pro Football Focus had a very high grade on him. I mean, some people think that this guy has the qualities to be a very good player on an offensive line for a long time. And there's a lot of shakeups on the offensive line. You know, Kyle Long's the only guy that's been there for more than a year. You know, played for more than a year, but they're trying to create something. They're taking some chances with some younger players, but they want their guys, and they believe Whitehair has the athleticism and the strength to be that guy. So good stuff there. Again, thank you to Kansas State and Charlie Dickey. Let's move it right along. Fourth round, the Bears traded up for an inside linebacker, West Virginia's Nick Kwiatkowski, which I now know how to pronounce. Thanks to our next guest, the play-by-play man for West Virginia Mountaineers and the Mountaineers Sports Network out there, Tony Caridi, talking about the Bears' new inside linebacker. Tony, I asked some of the Bears players that come on the podcast this question, and I'm going to open with this about the new Bear from West Virginia. And you would know this as the play-by-play man. How do you pronounce his last name?
Ah, very good question to start things off. Guess what? After he had been here for 3+ years, last fall, actually last July, at Big 12 Media Day. I did an interview with him, and I said, Nick, before we even start, it's your final season here for once and for all, because there had been conflicting, pronouncers out there on various sources. I said, say your last name, and it's actually easier than it looks. It's just Kwiatkowski.
Kwiatkowski.
Well, so it's not Quitta. You know, he had gone through a couple of years of Kwiatkowski.
Yeah.
It's just simply Quit, like the word quit, and Kowski. Kwiatkowski.
All right, that's going to be good. And I know Chicago fans, you know, all the Grabowskis out here are going to love having a Kwiatkowski.
You got to have a ski. I mean, I'm personally married to a ski, so you got to maintain your skiisms. Absolutely.
There you go. So Nick Kwiatkowski, we're going to get to know him through this interview here with Tony Caridi. By the way, follow him on Twitter at Tony Caridi. He told us how he went there as a safety his first year, and then obviously moved to linebacker for the next 3 years. What did you see in that progression as he kind of, not just that first year, but essentially from the player he was when he first got to Morgantown to the player he was when he graduated?
West Virginia has had a great deal of success doing exactly what they did with Nick, and that is take a player that played a particular position in high school and then raise them and develop them and grow them into a bigger body. And I think that was always the key with Nick. They knew from day one that when he came in, that this was a kid that had superb athleticism. You know, besides being a really good football player in high school, he was an excellent basketball player. Excellent basketball player. And in fact, I talked with one of the West Virginia coaches not too long ago, and they thought that he could have played, you know, at least a mid-major level in college basketball. So they knew they had an extremely athletic player, and they thought that the frame was there to grow his body and get him bigger. And so they knew this was a kid that they knew from day one when they got in here that he was going to grow into a linebacker. And he was also one of those guys that they also knew the second that he came onto the field, they said, this guy's going to be a good player. And you know that when guys get here, sometimes they kind of curdle an eye and they'll say, maybe. With him, they knew from day one, this guy is going to continue to grow and be a prototypical West Virginia-type player, a blue-collar kid that gets better.
And then when he moved to that linebacker spot, it's interesting to look at his production. He kind of talked about the way he was used from year after year after year. Within that defense, what was kind of his role, especially senior year, because that's obviously the last season we have of him on tape?
Well, you know, he unfortunately had to suffer through some bad couple of years here defensively. You know, just to kind of give you a little historical background, when Rich Rodriguez was here at West Virginia, they played the odd stack front defense, three down and 3-5-3. And so that was kind of the way that West Virginia had won a lot of games through the years, really the decade from, you know, the Rich Rodriguez era, from like 2002 and on. And unfortunately, while Nick was here, they transitioned out of that and then got back into it. Personnel changes, coaching changes. So he kind of, well, unfortunately, didn't play in the same system in the entirety of his career. And despite that, his numbers still were extremely strong numbers. And so, you know, he was a guy that could obviously play inside the box, but he also, because of that athleticism that I had mentioned earlier on, was a guy that could drop back in pass coverage. So he was that kind of a guy. And he was fun to watch develop, because every year he just kept getting to become more and more and more of a dominant. I don't necessarily know the word dominant, but just became more and more of a productive player. And I think, you know, that his last two seasons kind of bear that out. He had 11.5 tackles behind the line as a junior. He had 10 tackles behind the line this past season, and his tackle total was really consistent in each of the last 2 years. And I think in large part that's because West Virginia's defensive coordinator Tony Gibson came back into the program, had been around with Coach Rodriguez, came back in, became the D coordinator in each of the last 2 years, and Nick's numbers kind of showed that.
talking to Tony Caridi, West Virginia play-by-play man, about Nick Kwiatkowski, new Bears inside linebacker. And the Bears signed two veteran inside linebackers this offseason, so Nick's certainly not going to find a spot on the starting defense right away, but I'm sure he's going to be involved in special teams. And I think it's something that the Bears are excited about, knowing what he brings. And I know it's something he did earlier in his career, but from what you saw of him when he was on special teams and what you know about him as a player and a person, how do you think he's going to be able to contribute to special teams early on with the Bears?
Absolutely fine, because I think special teams is all about mindset, desire, and athleticism. And I think he brings all of those ingredients to that party. And I also think that he's a selfless player. And so I think he will completely embrace the opportunity to do that. Oftentimes when you do these kind of conversations with folks that are learning about a particular player for the first time, a lot of generalities and a lot of, you know, euphemistic comments go out there about, oh, what a great guy he is, oh, what a great kid he is, da 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 da. In this particular young man's case, it really is true. This kid's here in Morgantown, and there's never even a sniff or a hint of one wrong turn at any time. I mean, he is absolutely the definition of what you want in your college program and what you want on the professional ranks as well. This is one that the Bears organization is never going to have to worry about when they put their head on the pillow at night, that there's going to be a phone call or there's going to be any problem. He'll be one of those guys that's the first guy in there, last guy out each day. And I know it sounds too good to be true, but actually that's what this kid's all about.
And then there were three ways that Ryan Pace described Kwiatkowski, which was toughness, instincts, and he called him a throwback player. Now, those can be vague, but you've seen it for 4 years there. You saw it on the field. Do you have, whether it's a story, a specific game, a specific play that really resonates, that kind of epitomizes what his career was like there and the type of player the Bears are getting?
Well, I think more so than a specific one-time instance, Kevin, I think that it's just, you know, you mentioned, you know, he's the blue-collar guy and that kind of a thing. I mean, he comes from Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, which is Western Pennsylvania, which is Pittsburgh. And he is a throwback to the old school kind of mentality of how you played the game. Western PA does not produce the number of players that it used to, but he is kind of a throwback to that model of those are the kind of guys that stick their face in the fan, use the cliche. That to me epitomized what he was about. Where the ball was, he was going to find a way to get there and make a play. Consistent, solid, good form in his tackles, just all the kind of things. I mean, he's one of those guys that if you ever had the opportunity to have a franchise player on your college team and say, hey, I want that guy for 10 years, he's one of those guys that you wouldn't even hesitate to say, that's a guy I want on my team, because he's always going to be making plays for us. And, you know, stayed healthy, and as I said, off the field, did all the right things. I mean, if this sounds too good to be true, I'm sorry, but I mean that's the lay of the land on this young guy.
No, absolutely, that matches what we heard from Ryan Pace and John Fox, and it sounds like a guy Bears fans are really going to like. Tony, before I let you go, I got to ask you about Kevin White, obviously, because you knew him from his time with West Virginia. Bears fans are very much looking forward to seeing him on the field this year. How excited is Morgantown to see what Kevin White can do in the NFL?
Really excited. You know, he was only here for a couple of seasons, but his second season here, his final season here, which he made all of those highlight-type catches that I'm sure Bears fans have seen over and over and over again and can't wait to see him making them in a Bears uniform. He was a guy that it took time when he got here to acclimate to the level. And then instantaneously after that first season was over, and he showed flashes his first season. He showed like, whoa, did you see that? But it wasn't consistent. Second season, totally got it and was consistent throughout. For the most part, I mean, but big, huge numbers. His coming out party was in that season opener of his senior year. West Virginia played Alabama in Atlanta, and he just had a time, and that kind of set the tone for his entire senior season. So it was obviously, I don't need to tell you this, it was really a bum out that he was unable to go last season. But I do think that he's a guy that has all of the all the measurables that you want. I mean, he's got a great body. He's got a surprisingly good speed, and so I think that that he'll be good to go. You know, we've got his brother here, Karan White, who's also a receiver. Same kind of a deal. His brother showed flashes last year and then came out this spring, and the Mountaineer coaches are saying that he was the best receiver out there. So same kind of a deal as his brother. Took him a year, and then once he got it, it was off to the races. And now you know there's another one, Kazir White, and he's a defensive back, and he'll be arriving this June to WVU. And, I mean, he has potentially just an opportunity here to come right in and start immediately. So the White family has been huge here for WVU over the last several seasons, and hopefully Kevin will kind of lead that banner for the Bears this year.
Well, all eyes are going to be on him, and from talking to him myself a few times, I'm confident he'll be able to handle the pressure. I know the Bears are excited to get him on the field. Tony Caridi, West Virginia play-by-play man for Mountaineer Sports Network, talking fourth-round pick for the Bears, linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski. Tony, thank you for, of course, telling us how to pronounce his name and for breaking him down for us.
It's my pleasure. Nice to be with you.
All right. Thanks so much. I like this pick a lot. I like Kwiatkowski from what I've seen of him. Saw him at the Senior Bowl. Got a chance to talk to him down there actually a little bit. We talked about Kevin White, of all things. I wasn't really sure if he'd be in the Bears' plans at that time. But this is somebody that is productive. He's going to be a special teams ace. It's kind of going to maybe be a put Christian Jones on notice. John Timu, Jonathan Anderson, those backup inside linebackers got to know that Kwiatkowski's coming in there to right now maybe be the number three inside linebacker. So really good stuff there from Tony about how Kwiatkowski, what he meant to that defense, and I think it also how he developed and that athleticism he showed in high school in his freshman year should serve him well in the pros. Staying in the fourth round, the Bears then went to the defensive backfield, taking Deion Bush, strong safety out of Miami, the U. Hurricanes, of course, this was the weird situation where they draft the guy who looks up to Antrell Roll, and then they cut Antrell Roll, and Deion Bush could be taking his starting spot. But to learn a little bit more about what Deion Bush did in the Miami defense, talk to Matt Schodel of CaneSports.com, breaking down the new Bears safety. So, Matt, as someone who, you know, writes for CaneSport.com, you're covering football in the Miami area, you probably had a good idea of what Deion Bush was capable of even before he got to the Hurricanes. Pretty highly touted guy out of high school, already drawing the Antrell Roll comparisons. What did you know about him even as a prospect as he started his career at Miami?
Oh, yeah, we covered him a lot in high school. He and Tracy Howard and Duke Johnson, those were the three. They were the guys who were going to bring Miami back. Now, that didn't really happen, at least not yet. But Deion, I mean, just knowing him from high school and through college, obviously covering him when he was with the Hurricanes, super nice guy, very focused, very serious guy. He's not a guy who's going to be the prankster in your locker room, you know. Very focused on the task at hand. And he developed into a really good player, but I do think his upside is bigger than what he showed at Miami.
And he started right away there as a true freshman with the Canes. I don't know what the scenario was or how rare that is, but I'm always impressed when a guy is able to step in right away, and he started six games. I mean, could you see from the freshman year that he was going to be able to make that transition from high school to college and be a productive player?
Yeah, because he really has a nose for the ball. He's somewhat like a cornerback / safety. I mean, he doesn't have the hips of a corner. He's not going to play corner in the NFL by any means, but he had those ball-hawking skills that Miami really desperately needed when he came in. They were very thin at defensive back when he first arrived, which is why he started six games as a freshman. The issue he had his first 2 years, and not surprisingly, because he was sort of thrust into the action. I mean, he's a very, very hard hitter, and he wound up getting hurt both years. One time, I remember, against Florida State, he laid just a vicious hit, and he wound up, I think, dislocating his shoulder. He had some sort of shoulder injury because of it. But he's not a guy who's afraid to get in there and mix it up. But that did cost him those first 2 years until he really got stronger and bigger. And then the last 2 years, he was much healthier.
How did Miami utilize him in their defense the last 2 years?
Their free safety and strong safety are interchangeable. So he could have lined up at either. He did not play cornerback, so he was a pure safety from Miami, and they basically used him to help set the defensive secondary. You know, he's the guy who would make the calls, and also to be the guy who basically had that last man responsibility. You know, nobody got behind Deion Bush, and Deion did a very good job of being in the right spots. Now, an issue with Deion was the defensive scheme that was employed by Mark D'Onofrio, who has since been dismissed, but obviously that was after last season. Deion maybe wasn't allowed to play maybe as freely as he wanted to, so to speak. You know, there were very strict sort of rules for what they wanted each position to do, and it wasn't necessarily something where they just said to Deion, make a play. They would tell him, you know, this is what you're doing in this situation. You're not the guy making the play in this situation. You know, you're trying to just sort of help out here, and this is the guy who's going to make the play. You know, that was sort of how this defense was predicated. At Miami, it's going to be a much different scheme he'll be in the NFL, so he'll have to adjust to that, but I think he'll actually fare better if he's sort of let loose a little bit more than he was at Miami.
I think you mentioned this earlier, too, about, you know, obviously he's known for being a hard hitter, and he doesn't have the hips to be a corner, but what can you tell us about his ball hawking? I mean, does he have kind of the nose and the instincts to play over the top if he's asked to?
You know, see, that's the thing that I'm talking about with Mark D'Onofrio. Like, you know, they wouldn't say to Deion, you know, try and, you know, look at the quarterback. When he watches film of a team, he can get a sense for what they're going to do. But they didn't want him to do that. They didn't want him to read the quarterback's eyes, to see something developing and go to that spot where he wasn't supposed to be, but he could have made an interception there. You just stay in your spot, Deion. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're going to do no matter what you think is going to happen. They didn't really let him play with his instincts. So as a result, I think he had the 3 or 4 interceptions in his career. He wasn't he is a ball hawk, but he wasn't allowed to be a ball hawk, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I'm saying. In the NFL, I think he'll have a lot more success with getting interceptions and big plays of that nature.
Interesting. And with the hard hitting, he had the targeting against Nebraska incident. In the NFL, we know how much they're, you know, really strict with the penalties, too. You don't have the ejections as much as the college game with the targeting rule. But did you see him kind of adjust maybe from the Nebraska game throughout that senior season to make sure he was still making hard hits but avoiding getting flagged for them?
I mean, the Nebraska thing was sort of a freak thing where he just basically put himself in the wrong position on a play, and it looked like a targeting. He wasn't trying to target, that's for sure, you know. He wasn't trying to spear the guy. But you know, his senior year was, I thought his junior year was actually his best college season, believe it or not. He played a little more abandoned. He was hitting a little harder. Now, I don't know if it had anything to do with the targeting. He forced 5 fumbles as a junior, didn't force a single fumble as a senior, okay?
Oh.
So that tells you something. So, you know, I don't know if he was dealing with maybe an undisclosed injury, but I don't think it had anything to do with targeting. You know, it might have just been something with how they were asking him to play or something like that more than anything.
I don't know if you have a strong or interesting reaction to this, but with your connection to Miami, I found it interesting that Deion Bush was compared to Antrell Roll. He told us that he trains with Antrell Roll, looks up to Antrell Roll, and then the Bears cut Antrell Roll the day after they drafted Deion Bush, and Bush might take his position. Obviously, a lot of Miami connections there. Anybody in Miami kind of noticed that little dichotomy taking place?
Well, no, not in that terms, but he was compared to Antrell Roll coming out of high school, like, you know, Deion was. The thing with Deion and the thing with Miami players in general, and it sounds weird and it sounds homerish. I'm not a homer. I'm a journalist covering the Hurricanes, but it's a pattern where players drafted from Miami, if they're drafted in the first round, they usually pan out pretty well, which I'm sure a lot of first rounders do. But players taken in the later rounds, like the fourth round, for instance, with Deion, they tend to overachieve. You know, the Sam Shields is even Devin Hester, who I don't think went that low, but he didn't do much at Miami. There's a history of guys who maybe weren't amazing players at Miami who then went on and became pretty amazing players or at least very good players in the NFL. There's a definite pattern of that, and it would not shock me at all if Deion falls along those lines.
Yeah, obviously Bears fans know Hester well. He was second round pick here and you know, one of the best returners, if not the best returner of all time. Matt Schodel here of canesport.com talking about Deion Bush. The Bears, you know, he's lined up right now. He could be the starting Bears safety on day one. We'll see how the competition plays out. And kind of wrapping things up here, Matt, when you see his abilities in college, and I know your job is to cover the college game, but you obviously have a good understanding of football. How do you think some of those things are going to be able to translate to the NFL, especially in a defense that might do a better job pairing Deion's traits to what they want him to do on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can fare very well in the right system, you know, and I think the Bears will offer him that. He's a guy who does like to roam around and sort of mix things up. He'll stick his head in and knock, you know, he's a guy who basically, this is the easiest way to put it. When a receiver's coming across the field, I do think they'll be thinking about Deion Bush after they see a few of his first games as a Bear. I mean, he's a guy who you got to be aware of. He's fast, he's physical, and he's athletic. You know, you can't ask for much more in a safety. I think the reason he wasn't a high draft pick is he just didn't really have that college career that he should have had, that many thought he'd have coming out of high school. He didn't fulfill the potential. But again, and I'll keep saying it, he wasn't allowed to play to his full potential in the system in which he played in college. So I don't think anyone's really seen the real Deion Bush and what he can really accomplish, and I think they're going to start seeing that when the Bears realize what they have here.
Yeah, well, John Fox was a safety when he played. He's coached defensive backs. Vic Fangio, obviously, and Ed Donatell, the defensive backs coach, they know a lot. So it seems like he is certainly a size, speed, athleticism prospect more so than production, and they're going to kind of look into it and probably try to take advantage of it and turn Deion Bush into a pretty good player. Matt Schodel, canesport.com, breaking down Bears' fourth-round pick, safety Deion Bush. Matt, thanks again for your time and your insight.
Anytime.
Really interesting stuff there from Matt explaining how Deion Bush was probably used improperly in Miami with that Hurricanes defense, because you don't necessarily see numbers that jump out to you off this page when you look at Bush's stats, but he has the athleticism, he has the size, he's a big hitter. And I think the Bears want Adrian Amos to be much better in pass coverage this year. He's got the speed to do it. He played corner in college. So you need more of an in-the-box guy, which I think Bush can be if he wins that job. You got Chris Brzezinski back, got Harold Jones-Corte, but those guys maybe know more. Certainly Brzezinski better on special teams. I think Jones-Corte is an interesting one because he played well down the stretch last season, but you got to give a guy that's not afraid to stick his nose in there, and I think Deion Bush can provide that. You know, will he maybe open on special teams and compete with Jones-Corte? I think that's maybe how things will start. But interesting to see that, again, you can't judge a guy completely what he did in college, and that's where Vic Fangio at Donatell will bring Bush in and put him into their defense the way he's best fit. I thought this was a really cool pick for the Bears next. It was the first small school pick by Ryan Pace, and that was DeAndre Hall, cornerback out of Northern Iowa. This guy stood out to me back in January at the Senior Bowl. Long arms, was not afraid to mix it up with some of the BCS players he was playing against. I actually pat myself on the back here, had him in my Bears mock draft. I actually had him in a round early, had him going in the third round, but I just reading about him, the scouting reports from what I saw in person, he just screamed a type of Vic Fangio type of guy, whether he plays corner or safety. When we talked to DeAndre Hall last Saturday afternoon, he pointed out his defensive backs coach at Northern Iowa, Brandon Lynch, really helped him hone his ball hawking skills, and Charles Tillman kind of being a guy he modeled his game after. So, of course, we got to talk to Brandon Lynch, then Northern Iowa's defensive backs coach, breaking down the cornerback, maybe a safety one day too. We'll see what he can do in DeAndre Hall. Northern Iowa defensive backs coach Brandon Lynch joining us here to talk about DeAndre Hall, the Bears' fourth round pick. And coach, when you first met DeAndre, I don't know if it was his freshman year or even before then, what was kind of your first thoughts when you saw him out there on the field?
You know what? I thought he was a capable, big, competitive athlete. You know, I remember taking a job and standing by him and thinking, you know what? I wish the Lord would have blessed me with those type of measurables.
Yeah, that length is something that everybody talks about. How did you see him kind of learn to use it through his 4 years there? Because you can have that length and not know how to best utilize it. So it might have been something for him to learn. How did you see that progression?
You know what? The progression of a young guy maturing. You know, you really start seeing him after his sophomore year, really start to put forth the effort and apply himself. You know, it really was wildfire on the team because you had a guy that had all the measurables, you know, a young guy that was capable, but then he really started applying it. He started applying it in his studies, and, you know, he's reaping the rewards of it now.
He mentioned that he likes to model his game at corner after Charles Tillman, which, of course, Bears fans got excited about. Peanut was a legend here. And he mentioned you, Coach Lynch, as really helping him be a ball hawk. What do you see from him in terms of his ball skills?
You know what? In regards to Charles Tillman, me and Charles played against each other in college. So I got an opportunity to see an abstract look at exactly what Charles looked like in college, and I played against him when I was in Indy. So they are extremely parallel. So when you talk about their ball skills, you know, the same way that Charles would be physical and attack the ball and really was a receiver, you know, you see the exact same skills as far as in DeAndre, you know, with him having an offensive background. The biggest thing that we really liked about him is once he got his hands on the ball, his offensive traits really would take over. And that's why he ended up having an opportunity to lead our team in career pick sixes at the school.
Yeah, DeAndre was a receiver in high school, had 9 touchdowns his senior year there. When he's at corner, when I see a guy with those measurables, you don't necessarily think that he's fit for the slot or the nickel position. But Ryan Pace, the Bears GM, said that they can really use DeAndre anywhere. How was he used in Northern Iowa when he was playing corner? I mean, did you guys move him around a little bit, take advantage of his abilities?
You know what? We did. He was fortunate to play with a really good defensive line and a counterpart on the other side that could play man well. So we really would just tell him to lock up X and Z and denote 9 guys to the box so we could stop the run. And, you know, the young guy was very consistent with his technique and was able to produce outside.
Mm-hmm. And what about his ability if the Bears needed him to play safety? I know he played safety in high school. It seems like he has the instincts and kind of the size and physicality. I mean, do you see a type of guy? Did you ever use him in that role a little bit? Do you see someone that could one day play that position if he's asked to in the NFL?
You know what? Absolutely. You know what? And I really think his corner background, when we would talk about it, it's gonna get him a few more years in the NFL because he is a rangy, athletic person. So with him naturally maturing, he's going to put on size, and I can easily see him playing, that nickel Sam position or, you know, one of the safety positions easily.
Mm-hmm. I got a chance to see DeAndre at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and getting down there, you know, I didn't really know much about him, just read a scouting report or two, and he really was one of the guys that stood out to me the whole week down there against really good competition, as you know. How important do you think was that, and were you surprised at all that he kind of stepped up in that kind of situation in front of NFL scouts?
You know, absolutely not. You know, and he's the type of young guy that he would always be on his best game versus our best components. You know, he's a 100% a great competitor. So I know that type of environment was really going to put him at his highest. So I thought he did a good job at really executing what we've seen the last few years that he's done every day in practice.
Mm-hmm. He certainly seems to have that cornerback swagger, right?
A little bit, yes, sir.
Yeah. Is there a game, a play, you know, when you think of DeAndre that really stands out? I mean, you mentioned the pick sixes, but is there anything specific that's the first play that you think of when you think of DeAndre?
You know what? I do. I think about the Eastern Washington game, him breaking his hand, him coming back on the field, and it was a specific coverage that we were in, and Eastern Washington ran quick game. So he recognized the route. He broke on it, you know, he anticipated well, but he just knocked the ball down and he came to the sideline and said, "Well, coach, you know, I just knocked the ball down because of my hand." I'm like, "Son, you are all American and want to be the best in the country." So we come out in the fourth quarter, exact same situation, exact same route concept. He anticipates. This time he bodies it. And ends up putting us up, and we end up winning that game. And I think that showed just his maturity as well as his belief and his abilities. You know, I think he really starts stepping up after that moment.
Wow, that's something else. And just a couple more for you, Coach. What was DeAndre like off the field? You know, whether it's in the film room, studying, what could you tell us about the football player off the field?
You know what? You're going to get a servant. You know, he's a very team-first guy, fast learner. You know, he's the type of guy that really is going to be humble enough to listen to the veterans in the locker room, you know. But at the same time, he's a very confident young guy and knows that he can contribute. So, you know, I think that just from a teammate perspective, you know, he's going to be a great guy. He's going to be a pro. He's going to be a professional.
I'm sure there are a decent amount of Bears fans out there in the state of Iowa, and I know you're pretty busy in the fall, Coach, but I imagine you'll be tuning into a few Bears games this year?
Absolutely. My family and I have already started looking at which ones we may can get to.
That's awesome, and I imagine that you have a lot of pride watching DeAndre make it this far from the player you first saw, and I, you know, he did credit you a little bit for that ball hawking, so I think you should take some pride in that as well.
That is a blessing. I appreciate it.
All right, Coach Brandon Lynch from Northern Iowa talking about Bears fourth round pick DeAndre Hall with us. Coach, really appreciate the time. Thanks again. Cool story there from Brandon Lynch, not only about that game when DeAndre made that interception when he missed one earlier, but the Charles Tillman connection. Brandon Lynch played against Tillman, so he knows, you know, that comparison. I mean, there's more to it than just DeAndre Hall saying he likes Tillman. I mean, there's something there from the defensive backs coach, Brandon Lynch. So thanks again to him and Northern Iowa for helping set that up, talking about DeAndre Hall. Quick aside here, we got to talk about our sponsor, LootCrate.com. It's a monthly subscription box service for geeks, nerds, comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados. Every month, you get a mystery box full of collectibles, apparel, memorabilia. There's $45 of value in every box. And this month's theme, guys, perfect for fans of Marvel, the Avengers, Warcraft, and Dragon Ball Z. And talk about Marvel, big summer coming up. We got Civil War movie coming out, which looks awesome. And in this box, you're going to get something for your kitchen. You're going to get a monthly t-shirt, a couple, and two more items to kind of fix that need that you got there for Marvel Comics, of course, Warcraft, Avengers, Dragon Ball Z. I got to say, speaking of nerds here, Dragon Ball Z is one of those shows when I'm flipping through the TV guide, I just get that nostalgia because I grew up on that show a little bit, you know, letting the nerd show. And would flip it on. There's Dragon Ball Z, you know, just to remember what it was like. But anyways, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. Get $3 off your first box at lootcrate.com. Cool box coming to you in the month of May. Again, that's lootcrate.com/Shaw. All right, let's go to our final interview for part one of the Get to Know the Bears podcast. And now we're talking about the fifth round pick. That would be Jordan Howard, the running back out of Indiana. And to talk about Jordan Howard, who only spent 1 year in Bloomington, but it was a very productive year, helped get him a fifth round nod to the Bears, we talked to Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. So, Zach, when Jordan Howard first transferred to Indiana, obviously the Hoosiers getting that kind of offensive jolt. What was the buzz on campus when it got announced that Howard was going to be there?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly excitement. And if you consider the context, Indiana had just lost Tevin Coleman to the draft. He was a 2,000-yard rusher, very different kind of back, but the same idea that, you know, Indiana doesn't get running backs like that very often, and then they lose him a year early to the NFL. And there were obviously questions about kind of who replaced him, how do you replace him, his direct backup, D'Angelo Roberts, had just graduated, and then it just kind of obviously by luck or happenstance, whatever you want to say, with the whole unfortunate situation at UAB, Howard opened up, and Indiana really put on the full court press to get him, and I think it was, everybody kind of realized he was a different kind of back from Coleman, but there was excitement at the idea that Indiana could lose a back to the NFL of Coleman's caliber and yet still be able to replace him so quickly.
Mm-hmm. And because you mentioned a little different, he's a bigger back and maybe a little more comfortable in, I don't know, pass protection or whatnot. How was he used in that Indiana offense, which is obviously a little bit different than what the NFL offenses are?
Indiana is a spread offense. It's an incredibly fast-paced offense. So he got usually 25-30 carries a game, but he'd also get subbed a lot just because you know, no one person can kind of move that fast in an NFL game a college football game for, you know, 80, 90 plays. But I mean, he was used. He certainly, as you talked about, he's a good pass protector. And I think I don't think Indiana even realized when they first got him just how smart of a football player he was. And you hear linemen and even Indiana's quarterback talking about how sometimes Howard could see their reads as well as he could see his reads, and he'd make comments on good reads that they made and things like that. And they'd be like, "Well, what are you? You're the running back. How do you know what we're supposed to be doing?" But in terms of the running style, I mean, it was, you know, they got him downhill. Indiana obviously had a very good offensive line this year as well. Two All-Americans, one returned for his fifth year, Jason Strick. The other one went to the Green Bay Packers in the second round. So there were some zone blocking concepts. There were some stretch plays. But generally, the goal was just to get Howard moving downhill, because he's very much one of those backs where if you got Coleman to the second level, it was quite possible nobody's going to catch him because he was so explosive. When you got Jordan Howard to the second level, he was just one of those guys that's incredibly hard to tackle because he runs downhill really well. He's obviously very physical. He's not afraid of contact. And when you had to bring safeties up to try and tackle him, it was a very mixed bag for defenses to try to do that. So kind of, you know, I don't want to say the most orthodox way ever, because, again, you're right, that offense isn't going to translate perfectly from college to the NFL. But they used him about as you'd expect for a back of his skill set and his talent.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indy Star, he covers the Hoosiers there, so he covered new Bears running back, fifth-round pick Jordan Howard last year. And, Zach, the injuries have kind of been a question mark that we've talked about. We talked to Jordan about it, and he downplayed it. He said somebody fell on his ankle for one of the injuries, so it's kind of out of his control. But there were a few games that he got nicked up, and, you know, part of it's probably his running style. But what could you tell us about his durability there and some of the injuries that he dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he was only in Indiana for one season, so I can't talk about his sort of entire career. But he is right. That first injury, the ankle injury, was sustained. I think he was in pass pro, and the pocket kind of collapsed, and somebody just rolled on his ankle from behind. They might have jumped up, actually, just, you know, in the process of falling down. Something nobody could really control. The other one, I guess, you know, in Indiana, like many teams, college and pro, tends to safeguard that information, that the injury information, so much. But I guess the other one was something he tried to fight through most of the year, that he just couldn't quite, you know, get to the end of the season with it. I know there are obviously some concerns about his running style, certainly when you consider the lifespan of the average running back in the NFL today. Anyway, as big and fast and physical as defenses have gotten. I will say that it seems like the injuries he sustained at Indiana weren't necessarily injuries of wear and tear, or his body not being able to stand up to it. That ankle injury absolutely was just kind of wrong place, wrong time situation. So, you know, I guess I will say, and I'm not professing to read everything Mel Kiper writes or listen to everything he said, but I heard him say something in the draft about, you know, maybe teams are going to want him to avoid contact a little bit more. He definitely is a running back that is not afraid of it, and I think sees that as one of his greatest strengths, his ability to get low and really initiate contact as opposed to absorbing it. I did think there were times this year where he was good at understanding when to lower the shoulder and really sort of try and truck somebody, and also when to basically sort of just crouch there and then spin out and avoid the contact, stretch forward for an extra 2 or 3 yards, you know, the old sort of turn the 2-yard gain into the 4-yard gain, turn the 5-yard gain into the 7-yard gain, that kind of thing. So I can see why teams maybe want him to ease back on that a little bit. I don't know that the injuries he sustained at Indiana this year were necessarily ones of a guy whose body just can't stand up, if that makes sense.
Right, absolutely. Now, I got to ask you about the Michigan game, because I watched that game on my phone. I was on the train going to the airport, and I couldn't turn it off, because every time he touched the ball, I mean, he was running over that Michigan defense, which was a very good defense. Obviously, Indiana lost what was a crazy game, but was that one of those games that people, whether it was in the program or outside the program, really opened their eyes and were like, wow? I mean, I know it was later in the season, so he had other big games, but that one, to me, I feel like stood out more than any other to show you what he is capable of.
Yeah, I mean, I think within the program, I think people were not surprised. And you know, if you talk to people that pay a lot of close attention to IU football, I think really that game for Jordan Howard and also for Indiana's offensive line was one that maybe made people around the Big Ten and nationally stand up and take notice. I think it was, what, 238 yards he had that night?
Yeah.
That was the second most yards a running back has ever posted on Michigan, ever. I mean, like, at all. David Anderson from Northwestern has the record, and behind him now is Jordan Howard. And it was the fact that, I mean, that is a very stout defense, one of the best run defenses in the country in 2015. And between the offensive line that was opening up holes for him and obviously Howard, I mean, they were just knocking Michigan out of the way. They should have won that game, frankly. If they're just a little bit better defensively, they do win that game. But it was definitely one where I think, I'm not sure a ton of people sort of in Bloomington were surprised, because Indiana's obviously had a very good run game. If you look at the last 2 or 3 years, again, with Coleman, a player named Stephen Houston, who had a cup of coffee in the NFL, and now Jordan Howard, and even Devine Redding, Jordan Howard's backup, who also rushed for 1,000 yards this season by the end of it. But I think that was one that really, for Howard and for his offensive line, that game maybe woke a lot of people up to just how good Indiana's been running the ball. Not just having, you know, that sort of explosive home run threat that everybody can look into every once in a while, like Devin Coleman. Not that Coleman's not a great back, but you don't get in any of those. Just to be able to have such a consistent, regular run game against such a good run defense, that turns into it.
We'll wrap up with this, Zach, and I want our listeners to go Google Howard Wears His Heart on His Sleeve, I believe was your headline, or on his shirt, and that was a feature you wrote about him back in October. Really good story about his family. Jordan lost his father about 9 years ago. While researching that story, talking to Jordan's mom, talking to Jordan, what did you learn about kind of Jordan Howard, the man that the Bears are going to get, and kind of going through that process and getting to know him a little bit?
You know, what was interesting, and it's kind of inside baseball, but talking as a reporter, you always love to talk to parents, because there's something parents want when you're profiling a player, because there's something parents want to do more than talk about their kids. I mean, that applies to my parents. It applies to most parents I've ever talked to. And I was talking to his mom, who's a lovely woman. He's from Birmingham, Alabama, a small suburb of Birmingham. And just kind of we were going through all these different things. And at some point I kind of wanted to ask about his dad, because I'd been told that his father had passed when he was younger. And she just kind of stopped mid interview and said, you know, I want to make sure I talk to you about Jordan's dad, because how important his dad was to him, how much he meant to him. And basically, I'm trying to remember the whole story exactly. I believe his father passed from a chronic lung ailment or something similar to that when he was 12. And he got this T-shirt with his father's picture on it that he's worn in every game he's played since. It's brown now. It's too small for him. He's cut the sides out. He's cut the sleeves off. But he still wears it. He changed his middle name legally to his father's name. I believe his father's name was Reginald when he was 15 years old, as a way of honoring him. Everyone I talked to said he's a lot like his father. They were both very quiet men, both very thoughtful, both people, both very loyal. And if they got to know you and came to trust you, they could be, you know, incredibly close friends, allies, confidants, whatever you want to say. But, you know, he has obviously been without his father for a while, but I don't think he's ever really let what his father meant to him sort of drift away from him. I know it's something he's got a really strong family support. He has family in Birmingham and in Atlanta who drove up to Bloomington for basically every game. He had family in Fort Wayne, Indiana, who came down to Bloomington for just about every game. They were at most, if not all, road games. I think his mother said that she'd only missed one game he's played since his high school career started. She told me that she had to attend a funeral. That's it. I mean, there's a strong family support there. He's a quiet kid. If you see interviews with him, things like that, he won't say much. But that's not because he's dumb or because he hates the media or anything like that. He's someone who keeps things to himself and doesn't, you know, to torture the cliche, wants to let his actions do the talking more so than his words. But he's someone who, by all accounts, is a great kid. I know that people behind the scenes with IU football really enjoyed working with him, you know, academic support and you know, the quality control people, all that would rave about just how polite he was, how nice he was, how friendly. His teammates would tell us that, you know, he may seem kind of dull and boring to you guys, but trust me, he's not like that with us. So it's, again, I don't want to act like I'm the expert on his character. I've only covered him for a year and obviously read a few stories about him. But by all accounts here, he's a very good player, a very hard worker, and somebody who comes from a good family, has a good head on his shoulders, all the kinds of things you want, obviously, in a football player.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's a great story. Go Google it. Go check it out. Howard Wears His Heart on His Shirt by Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star covers the Hoosiers and Bears fifth-round pick running back Jordan Howard. Zach, thanks so much for the time and the insight into the Bears' new back.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again to Zach Osterman for the interview. Go check out that story. Really good insight into Jordan Howard and his family. And interesting hearing Zach break down how they use Jordan in the backfield and some of the pass protection stuff. And I think it's going to be something worth monitoring how he handles contact in the NFL, because I can tell you it's something the Bears like, is that he will go through contact. You know, he's that north-south runner. I think he's going to challenge Kadeem Carey for some playing time there as a number two back. You know, he was very productive in college, and I think he should be a good complement there to Jeremy Lankford. Let's close up shop. This is fun for you guys because you didn't have to really hear me talk about the draft picks. You got to hear the experts, the folks that really knew these guys well, talking about them. So let me thank all of them again. Tony Caridi talking about Nick Kwiatkowski. Charlie Dickey talking about Cody Whitehair as the Kansas State offensive line coach. Brandon Lynch talking about DeAndre Hall. Matt Schodel on Deion Bush. And Zach Osterman on Jordan Howard. My executive producer, Dan Mott, was in here with me. We did the back-to-back interviews. He was a man fighting through a little bit of an illness and still doing a great job producing this one for you. I hope you all enjoyed it. Learn more about these picks. Stay tuned next week, part two. We're going to talk Leonard Floyd, Jonathan Bullard, DeAndre Houston Carson, and an awesome guest to talk, Daniel Braverman. We're going to talk to PJ Fleck, coach of Western Michigan. Chicago folks should know him well. That's it for Chicago Football Podcast. Check out all our stuff at profootballweekly.com/Bears and follow us on Twitter at Bears_insider.
The Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember,
it's Unprintable.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkish, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.